Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. A special commission on last summer's brutal Israeli war on the Gaza Strip has submitted a scathing report to the United Nations Human Rights Council. The report, released on Monday in Geneva, was authored by Mary McGowan Davis. McGowan Davis is a former New York Supreme Court judge. The report points out that Israel violated international law in its air and ground operations during the 51-day war, and that Palestinian armed groups flouted a law in relying on indiscriminate rockets launched at Israel. Of course, Israel, which refused to cooperate with investigators, carried out the overwhelming bulk of attacks on Gaza's civilian population, killing far greater numbers of people than groups like Hamas did. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu immediately denounced the report, saying, quote, "It is biased. The commission that wrote it is under a committee that does everything but protect human rights." An ongoing war crimes inquiry by the International Criminal Court is expected to include this report. Meanwhile, Israel released its own report last week, completely absolving itself of wrongdoing. My guest is Jennifer Lowenstein. She's a faculty associate in Middle East Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome to Uprising, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what do you make of the fact that the report seemed to condemn Palestinian armed groups and their resistance efforts almost as much as Israeli war crimes?
I believe I know why they did that. I think it was an attempt by the people who were working on the commission to show even-handedness to the Israelis. They didn't want to be perceived as focusing only on Israel, but in my view, it was a mistake to do that because Israel and Hamas are not equal parties to the conflict. What we're talking about would be analogous to comparing slave uprisings and the white crackdown on slaves as somehow equal. That wouldn't absolve anyone in a slave population from committing an atrocity. People would understand that. But at the same time, we're not talking about equal parties in a conflict. We're talking about one people that is under occupation, that is living under unbelievably terrible circumstances, and another population that has Palestinians captive,
right,
that keeps them captive. And I think people have to remember that. This is not a conflict between equals.
Now, certainly Hamas has come under fire, and I think legitimately so, for executing suspected collaborators. Again, that's Palestinians,
yes,
being killed, by the way. But do we have any comparison for how many Israelis were killed in that 51-day war compared to Palestinians? How many Israelis were killed by Hamas's rocket attacks, for example?
Six Israeli civilians were killed, and something like 69 soldiers. So in other words, within the laws of war, the proportion of Israeli soldiers killed, military targets, was acceptable. In the Gaza Strip, where between 65 and 75% of the victims were civilians, that is not acceptable. And most of the report's findings showed, in my view, that the Israeli military did not adhere to international humanitarian law or international law, and indiscriminately fired on densely populated areas, killing civilians in scores of civilians, and I believe very often deliberately.
Now, the report's authors interviewed many survivors in Gaza of the bombings. What sort of patterns were observed in this report? Was it obvious that Israel was sort of indiscriminate at best, but targeting civilians at worst? I mean, did it point to some kind of pattern of how Israel conducted this war?
Well, it did, in the sense that, first of all, you have to understand there were over 6,000 aerial strikes on the Gaza Strip during this period of time, early July to August, I believe, 26th. And the pattern was that the airstrikes in the initial few days of the war were clearly causing a very high number of civilian casualties. And this was known by the Israeli military. They could tell that civilians were being killed. And that did not change their strategy. In other words, they continued throughout the war attacking civilian homes, civilian buildings such as, or protected areas such as hospitals, schools, shelters, United Nations buildings, which are completely off limits in any conflict. This didn't stop throughout the war, if you can call it a war. I don't think of it as a war because, as I said earlier, it was not a conflict, and it is not a conflict between equals.
What about the use of so-called warnings that Israel reportedly offered to Gazans to evacuate their homes minutes before being bombed? Israel offered this as a gesture of humanitarianism, but of course the international community, many activists, denounced it as simply creating more panic and terror. How did the report view this?
Similarly, I mean, the report was worded very carefully, I thought, and in fact, too carefully for my own taste. you know, the so-called roof knock tactic, where a family in a residential home will be sitting around and a small rocket will be fired through the roof. And this is an indication to them that they have to get out of the house because within a certain amount of time, the house is going to be blown up. A lot of times people in these families don't know that. They don't realize that this is a warning of what's going to come. But as you said, there are these other reasons. People in the Gaza Strip don't have any place to go to. The Gaza Strip is the most densely populated area of land in the world. And you can't escape it. The population is imprisoned there. They can't leave. So when somebody gets a roof knock or a leaflet saying to get out of the area, most people don't know where to go. There are airstrikes all around. There is destruction in every direction you look. And it does create a sense of terrible panic and fear among the population. And it caused many people to stay at home because they felt that was the place they knew. They could possibly hide in a corner of the house. I don't know what people were thinking, except that they were very confused and obviously did not understand in many cases that they were supposed to get out and that in some cases they had seconds to do so.
All right, we all ought to put ourselves in that same position and imagine what would we do if we got such a warning while we were in our own homes, a place that we're supposed to feel safe. Among the incidents that were investigated was the killing of four Palestinian boys, all cousins, when they were playing on the beach in Gaza. And Israel reported that it investigated itself last week and said it was an unfortunate incident. However, Israeli soldiers were not to blame for mistaking these little boys as Hamas's Navy men. What did the UN report conclude on that? And also in general, how does the report view the Israeli war as it aimed, as it targeted and impacted children, Palestinian children? I believe 500 Palestinian children killed, among them, four of them, those boys on the beach.
Yes. Well, we have to remember again that in this There were Israeli commanders basically stating very openly to the public that everyone in Gaza is an enemy. Once a war starts, we're not talking about civilians versus combatants. The soldiers are facing not a civilian population any longer, but an enemy population. I think this accounts for not only the last conflict, Operation Protective Edge, but it also accounts for the activities of the Israeli forces in Operation Cast Lead in 2008 and 2009. Anybody in the Gaza Strip, in the mindset of Israeli military leaders, is considered a combatant, is considered an enemy. And this for me accounts for the complete indifference of the Israeli military to the lives of women and children, as well as men who are not involved in the military in any way. When you treat a population like that, you are dehumanizing them and turning them into turning what happens is nobody's a civilian, so everybody is a legitimate target.
Right.
That is a very dangerous way for people to think.
Now, even though we think of Gaza as not technically being occupied by Israel anymore because of the settlements being dismantled a few years ago, the UN Commission report says something quite important about it. It says, quote, "Israel has maintained effective control of the Gaza Strip within the meaning of Article 42 of the 1907 Hague regulations. The assessment that Gaza continues to be occupied by Israel is shared by the international community, as articulated by the General Assembly, has been reaffirmed by the International Committee of the Red Cross and the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court." How significant is this assessment that effectively Gaza remains occupied by Israel, even if there aren't actual settlements?
It's very significant because the lives and futures of people in Gaza are completely beholden to Israel. Israel controls Gaza by land, by sea, by air. It controls the food supply, it controls the water supply, and it controls, to a great extent, who can and cannot leave the Gaza Strip. Egypt does have a role there, but it's much smaller than Israel's role in controlling and patrolling and monitoring the borders of the Gaza Strip. I don't see how anyone can call the Gaza Strip anything but an occupied territory, and worse, an open air prison, if not an open air poaching ground, where any person living there is a legitimate target. For the Israeli military. This is a very sinister behavior on the part of on the part of Israel. It's also very ominous because this conflict is not anywhere near ending.
Now, Netanyahu, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, cited praise from US and European generals as a counterpoint to the UN report. Doesn't that right away sort of point out clearly how the US and Europe provide cover for Israeli crimes? I mean, Netanyahu can simply say, well, we'll dismiss this UN report because the US and Europe are behind me.
Oh, I mean, to me, this is just incredible. I think the European Union is, personally, I think it is a very cowardly body because it seems to want to fall in line with the Americans every time there's an American statement about this. As far as the Americans go, we've seen decades of U.S. foreign policy in which Israel is unconditionally pardoned for repeated war crimes, terrible war crimes, whether it's in the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, or up in Lebanon, where some of the most atrocious actions of the Israeli military have taken place over the last 5 or 6 decades. I could spend a long time trying to explain why this is so, but the fact is, when the U.S. objects to anything that Israel does, it is meaningless because behind their objections are no actions. They are not taking any action to stop funding. They're not taking any action to stop the building of settlements, to stop the influx and the growth of these settlement neighborhoods, which are in fact more settlements. If the United States is unwilling to act, it is supporting Israel's behavior militarily, politically, economically, and those policies have a very deleterious effect on the lives and, as I said, the futures of Palestinian people.
Well, Jennifer, let's talk about what this report could actually do. I mean, it's great to actually document these horrific war crimes. Earlier wars that Israel conducted on Gaza have also been documented and reported by the United Nations. I understand that this report is going to be used in an ICC inquiry, International Criminal Court inquiry into Israel's war crimes. But Israel is not party to the Rome Statute that created the court. So is this a toothless inquiry?
I don't think so because I have been involved in human rights activism for more than 3 decades, and in particular the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, as it's called. And there have been changes in the attitude of the American public. They're not major changes. I don't want to overstate it, but people are starting to question what's going on there. The Middle East is in the news so often, and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is in the news so often, that I think some of the activist work, and I think also the actions of Israel itself, many of which are caught on tape and are reported by very brave journalists, these are starting to filter down into the public of the United States and into the publics of Europe. So whether or not Israel is a signatory to the Rome Statute, it's a shame that it's not, but I don't see this report as being meaningless. I think at some point it will stand along with the last report on Israel's war, or attack in Gaza as more evidence of what a terribly barbaric and inhumane regime Israel has over the Palestinian, its captive Palestinian population.
And I should mention that there is a boat full of journalists and activists heading toward Gaza right now, Freedom Flotilla number 3, that are attempting to break the Israeli blockade of Gaza by sea. And they are hoping that this report will provide some protection as it shines an international spotlight onto what Israel is doing. Jennifer, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your analysis with us.
Thank you very much. I wish the best to the journalists, but I have to say I'm quite worried about them.
Yeah, certainly those previous boats have been attacked. Jennifer Lowenstein is a faculty associate in Middle East Studies at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And speaking of Gaza, by the way, journalist Max Blumenthal is heading to California. And for our audiences in the Bay Area, he's going to be speaking July 1st about his book, The 51-Day War, Ruin and Resistance in Gaza. That is happening July 1st at 7:30 p.m. at the First Congregational Church, 2345 Channing in Berkeley. And then he heads to Southern California a few days later for an event sponsored by Uprising and KPFK. I'll be interviewing Max on stage at the First Congregational Church as well, but the one in Los Angeles. That's July 7th at 7 p.m. That's at 540 South Commonwealth Avenue in LA. You can check out the websites of either station, whichever one you listen to get tickets. For the Bay Area event July 1st, check out kpfa.org to get tickets. For the Southern California event, July 7th, check out kpfk.org to get tickets. Tickets are very limited, and we hope you'll join us. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.